Welcome. This is Mental Unwind on the ATL Podcast Network with your host, Kiwasha Naomi, aka Therapist KP. Thank you for joining us. Well, let's get started, guys.
Welcome to the ATL Podcast Network. Ryan
Little. How do we define, diagnose, and classify mental disorders? When people think of psychology, they probably most often think about the conditions that it's been designed to understand, diagnose, and treat. We're going to be looking at mental illness as well as wellness.
Once again, thank you for joining me. I really appreciate it. You could have picked any other podcast, but thank you for choosing mine. I really just want to go over what the show is about. I know this is just the first episode, and I want to introduce you guys to myself and what we're going to be talking about. So my idea for this podcast was basically I wanted this to be a clinical show as well as a fun show so that we can kind of talk about it. And I want to focus on minority mental health issues. So I am an associate professional counselor, professional health counselor, clinical. I do have my master's in clinical counseling, so I am a little qualified to do this. So the guests that I have, they're going to be people who have their own mental health issues as well. I'm going to have guests who are my professors or people who have been in the field, have their own practice, a variety of different things. That's kind of what I want to go over with you guys. For this episode, I just want to introduce myself, how I got into the field. So first things first, as I said, my name is Kiwasha Naomi. I am a APC, which is an associate professional counselor in the state of Georgia. I'm licensed in the state of Georgia. And what an APC is that I'm kind of a newbie counselor, for lack of a better term. So I have to work for 3 years, still getting paid. Don't worry, I need my coins. For 3 years, and I have to get a total right now of 1,800 hours before I can become fully licensed. They're actually going to be changing that soon. This also means as an APC that I cannot take insurance. So at my practice, I only take cash at the moment. But don't worry, in time I'll change that. Plus, because I'm an APC, I'm cheap, so you can afford me. So that's kind of how APCs work. But we still do the same exact thing. It just means that we just graduated relatively recently. I graduated in 2016, so I have 2 more years. I took a 6-month break because I needed a break from school after I went out. And then I worked in the field. I've worked at a mental health institute. I'm not going to give you the name simply because I'm not really allowed to. So I worked at a mental health unit on a closed and locked unit. I had a wonderful time there, learned so much about the field. It was a wonderful experience. I currently work at an agency, also not going to tell you the name of that one. Where I work with people from the ages of 5 to 65, actually. I really want to focus on women, minority women. That is my specialty. So racial issues, women's issues, minority issues as a whole, depression. And I'll get into that a little bit later about me in my episode. Yes, as a therapist, I have been depressed. It's a thing. And those are kind of my specialty. You can also find me on Instagram at TherapistKP. If you want to follow me there, every week I pick a topic and I go over a few things. And of course, there's a day, What Issues Wednesdays, which is actually my favorite day. So you guys can send me emails and DMs and comment on the picture and I will respond to your questions. Don't worry, I will not be discussing the questions on here unless I ask for express written permission to do that. And even if I do talk about a question that you have asked, I will never, ever, ever disclose any identifying information. So you will probably hear me say an African-American female is going through something, 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 another. So it'll be a variety of different things, but I'll never give any, no names, no addresses, nothing like that, no specific ages. So if you are 29, you would be a person in their 20s. That would be kind of what it is. So no identifying information. My guest on here, they will have either their own personal degrees. I'll have some of my professors, which I absolutely love, who are specialists in specific areas of mental health. So they'll be able to give you more of the clinical side of it. But I'll also have guests on here who are dealing with their own mental health issues, whether past or present. And at some point, hopefully, I'll be able to have you guys, you know, call in and with your questions. I'm going to start doing Facebook Live videos as well so that you guys can ask me your questions live and I will answer them. Hopefully we can do something like that. So that is the goal for this podcast. And I really, really hope that you guys can be a part of it. As I mentioned before, what kind of got me into the mental health field was I was always interested in it. So I was fascinated by how the mind works. I actually wanted to be a psychiatrist. For those of you who don't know the difference between a psychiatrist, a psychologist, and a counselor, a psychiatrist is a medical doctor. So they actually had to go to med school and they're allowed to write you prescriptions. They're not really that person that's going to sit down and do quote unquote talk therapy when you think about a therapist. They are the ones that your talk therapist sends you to when you need medication or if they believe that you need medication. Not everyone who has a therapist has a psychiatrist as well. Then you have a psychologist. They can also do talk therapy as well. They just have a PhD, which also means that they cost more. Little hint, hint there. And then you have a counselor, which is what I am. And we do a lot of talk therapy. I'm a LPC/APC. So we are the ones that kind of focus on the whole well-being of the person. So we focus on the mind, the body. We also, you know, you do have Christian-based counselors. So, you know, those who are working on the spiritual aspect, but it's not just Christian-based. You do have Islam-based counselors, which a lot of people don't think about as a thing. It's relatively new to have that focus, but I think it's really awesome. So whatever your religion is, you can select someone who is focusing on your particular religion. So I think that's really, really awesome. And then you have people who specialize in a variety of different things. A lot of times people think that counselors and social workers do the same thing. We don't. I'm not really going to get into too much of the differences, but social workers, they literally work on the social aspect unless they're clinical. So a social worker is that person that works at, when you think about a person that works at DFACS. So I've actually worked at DFACS a while back. I worked as a consultant for DFACS, a therapeutic consultant for DFACS, so not directly with them. And so you have the social workers who were the ones that were assisting in making sure that the individuals, whether it be the child and or the parents, had the resources necessary to make sure that the environment that the child was in was safe, right? So they were the ones that were going to help with the housing, the getting jobs, getting schools, clothes, that type of thing. They were the ones that coming up with a treatment plan for this person. Usually a part of that treatment plan, not usually, almost always, a part of the treatment plan for the child and the parent is going to be therapy. That's where I come in. So usually I come in where they say, okay, you, the social worker will say, you have to see a therapist once a week, twice a week, however many times. You have to do family sessions. You have to do this, 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 and this. So I would be the one that comes in and then I do that. And then based on my assessment over time, of course, they tell you have to do it for a month, 2 months, however long it is, I'm the one that writes off and says, yeah, I think they need more, or I don't think they need more, or I think that reconciliation is possible, or whatever it is, or I might recommend, hey, they need to do parenting classes, they need to do anger management classes, things like that. If I specialize in anger management, then I can be the one that handles that anger management course. If I don't, then I need to tell the social worker so that they can get someone to do it. So that's kind of the difference. You do have social workers who can provide therapy. However, they have to be clinical social workers. So clinical social workers means that they have to be able to determine what exactly a mental disorder is. A lot of people think that everyone can diagnose. They can't. So social workers, a clinical social worker can diagnose. They can tell you what a mental disorder is. And all of us, no matter what branch of the mental health field we're in, we use the DSM. The DSM is basically our Bible. So it is what we use. We go in and we look through it. We have to study it. We have to take tests on it. And it's updated about every 20 years. So they add things and they remove mental health disorders. So we're currently on DSM-5. DSM-3, which was back in the 60s, listed homosexuality as a mental disorder. DSM-4 and DSM-5 does not have it as a mental disorder because it's not. It's really not. Who you decide to do in, you know, your own, the own privacy of your room is with a consenting adult is not a mental disorder. You know, there's debate around that, but clinically it's not. So that part is not really up to debate. So that's kind of the difference with the aspects of the mental health field. As a therapist, going back to why I kind of got into therapy, I was always fascinated with how the mind works, always fascinated with what I could do to help others like me. But I kind of steered away from it because it's not the most profitable field, contrary to popular belief. And that's just the truth of it. You know, that sounds terrible. You know, you shouldn't do this for money, but I have bills. You have bills. We all have bills. So let's be real. We all want to be able to live. And I can't be an effective therapist if I'm worried about getting evicted. So I kind of stepped away from it for a little bit before going back for my master's. But then I finally did. And what pushed me through it is I was going through my own depressive episode. I've been through one depressive episode before. I'm fortunate that it was only one. But it was pretty serious. It was pretty severe. I wasn't suicidal. I wasn't, you know, any of that, but I had all the other symptoms. So classic symptoms of depression is weight loss or weight gain. So I lost 65 pounds in 2.5 months during my depressive episode. I wasn't working out, wasn't doing anything. I just wasn't eating. I was constantly sleeping, which sounds like a bad thing or a good thing, depending on who it is. But for me, I'm an insomniac. So the fact that I'm actually diagnosed insomniac, so I don't sleep. So the fact that I was sleeping or trying to sleep or constantly tired anywhere from 18 hours a day was a lot. I was sleeping like a newborn. I was constantly tired, even when I was work. I had mood swings. So I was crying 1 minute. And if anybody knows me, I am not a crier. So I was crying. I was sad. I was very irritable all the time. Any little thing, I would be ready to, you know, just go off. And that was kind of what was going on with me. And I knew what was going on. I knew what it was. But even though I was into therapy, I was ashamed. I was embarrassed to go to therapy. I didn't want to, you know, because I am a strong Black woman and I don't need anybody to tell me what to do. I know what I need to do. And I was trying to fix myself. That's not how any of this works, but I was trying to do it. And then I finally went to a therapist. So I finally went to one. I was just like, you know what? This is just getting out of hand. I need help. And I went to a therapist. And she diagnosed me with anxiety disorder. I was like, that's wrong. That's not what I have. And I left. And I went to another therapist a week later. And then she said that I had bipolar 1. I was like, oh, nope, that's not what I have either. And luckily for me, I knew what I had because I kind of knew a lot of people in the field and I had studied it a little bit, you know, off and on. So I kind of knew enough to be able to advocate for myself. Finally met the most amazing therapist. She was like, you're depressed. It's classic depression. You have situational depression. And this is what's going on. And I saw her every week for 6 months. And the best thing that I could have ever done for myself, you know, time I started my locks started flourishing. Skin was glowing. You know, teeth was looking whiter. Everything gained a little weight back, walking around like I was thick. You know, this is what happened. And it was the best thing that could happen to me. And so it pushed me to go back to school because I never wanted someone to ever be in the position of being misdiagnosed. And I was furious with those two counselors at the time, you know, that I went to, and I was very, very angry with them. And going through school and going through the learning process, I realized that it wasn't their fault. It wasn't their fault because the truth is psychology is normed on Caucasian men. That's just the fact. Psychology for years did not study women and it didn't study minorities. It's only been recent, and by recent, in the past 40 to 50 years, where they started studying minorities. So a lot of the things that, you know, Freud and all of them, they would talk to women, but anytime they spoke to a woman, it was based on what a Caucasian man would deem abnormal. There was one point that science literally thought that women's womb were wandering around in our bodies. That's literally a thing. Like they literally, scientists and doctors literally thought that our wombs were just chilling and just waving around in our bodies. And then when we had our menstrual cycle, that's when they stopped and then they started rotating again. So this is actually a scientific thing that people really, really thought. So of course they really didn't care about women. So of course they didn't care about minorities. And so here in the past 40 and 50 years, they've been studying, but there's still, psychology is old. You know, it's over 100 years old. And to say that less than half of that time they've been studying minorities, and even now the research is still thin in comparison, we have a long way to go, which is why I was misdiagnosed, because they're looking at me based on what they see, based on how they were taught to look at me. So they weren't factoring in my race. They weren't factoring in my gender. They weren't factoring in my social economic status. And that's something that they've been trying to factor in more and more recently, which I'm happy to say, but it's just not enough, which is why you have that whole idea of cultural competence. So cultural competence is basically people learning about, well, not people, therapists learning about different cultures so that we know how to treat people with different cultures and not view them the same. So you have this whole initial idea of a person with a mental health issue is a person with a mental health issue. That's just how we look at them. This is what they are. This is what they do. This is how it goes. And we just kind of left it at that. But now cultural competence is kind of say, wait, hold on one second. So the average Caucasian male coming into therapy will look you directly in the eye. If he doesn't, that means he's hiding something, or he's lying about something, or he's, you know, being avoidant. That is what you're taught, which would technically be correct. Now, if an Asian man comes into your session and he's doing the same exact thing, he's not being avoidant. He's actually showing respect. It's disrespectful sometimes to look someone directly in the face. They're really big on personal space in Asian cultures, and we have to factor that in. Same thing for a black man. If he, an older black man who's in his 50s, who's going to therapy for the first time, if he's seeing a Caucasian woman, he's not going to look her in the eye because of the time that he grew up in. You don't do that. And even though times have changed, there's still the idea, there's still that fear of, you don't look a white woman in the eye. So we have to factor that in before we diagnose someone. And so that is something that we have to do. So at that point, I realized those two therapists that misdiagnosed me, it wasn't their fault. But a good way to combat that without the cultural competence is to have more black therapists, or to have more minority therapists that can truly understand the experience. And I wanted to be that person. I wanted to be the individual who can help some black woman, some black man out there with their issues, because we are a very underserved population. And like I said, not everything that I'm going to discuss on this podcast is going to be surrounded by, you know, black issues, but a majority of it will be. But a lot of it will deal with minorities as a whole. And of course, I'm going to incorporate some general psychology, which of course is based on Caucasian people. And yes, I know that might sound wrong as a therapist, but I do have white clients and I treat all my clients the same. But at the same time, I recognize that my minority clients need me a little bit more. A big thing for me is that I try to encourage everybody as often as possible to go to therapy. I mentioned earlier that when I had my depressive episode that I saw my therapist for 6 months every week. Then we stepped down to once a month, well, twice a month for 3 months. And then after that, I saw her once a month for 3 months. And then after that, I just saw her when I felt like it. If I felt like I needed to talk to her about something, whether it was me being stressed or just any issue that's going on in my life that I feel like, okay, I need to be able to process this, I would go and see her even after school. So even currently, I currently have a therapist. The old therapist that I had that was extremely helpful, she's retired. Makes me sad. I wish she would just keep me on, just come out of retirement just for me. But I have a new therapist and she's just as amazing, equally as amazing. And yes, I am a therapist with a therapist. And if you ever go to therapy, your therapist probably has a therapist, or they should have a therapist, because we take on a lot. We process a lot of different things and we still have to go through regular people stuff, heartbreak, you know, financial issues, just family issues. We're just regular people. We've just been trained on how to deal with these issues a little bit better than the average person. And we're also trained how to teach other people to deal with things better than the average person. That's literally what our job is. But just because we know how to do it doesn't mean that we are effective in doing it all the time. It's just like that dentist, right? You have that dentist that doesn't floss every single day like he's supposed to, right? Is that how that goes? Or you have that that fitness trainer who has a cheat day and just goes ham, completely ham on it. They know that they're not supposed to eat all the stuff that they just ate, but they did because that happens. That's what happens in life. And so as a therapist, we go through regular stuff. You know, we get angry in traffic. I do. I have road rage. I need to work on that. But that's just what happens. Right. And I always tell people that I'm in therapy as a therapist because I want to normalize therapy. And I want people to know that it is perfectly okay to go and see a therapist. And that's one of the things that one of the topics we're going to eventually talk about on the podcast is about what therapy is and how exactly it works. People have a very skewed perception of what therapy is, how it works, what confidentiality is, you know, all those different things. And it's just interesting, you know, to have people tell me what it is. You know, I'm in the field, so of course I know exactly what it is, but then you have people who tell me like, no, this is what happens. I'm like, no, sweetheart, no pumpkin. You have to do that Southern, oh, poor baby, poor pumpkin. You have to do one of those sometimes when you're talking to people. And in situations like that, you just have to figure out, how do I get people to feel comfortable with going to therapy? And I say this all the time, people, the fear of being labeled as crazy, because of course, if you're going to a therapist, that means that you're crazy, no matter what it is you're going for. You know, unfortunately, you know, your mom could have died 2 days ago and you're going to therapy and you're like, oh, you crazy. No, you're not. That's perfectly normal for you to do that. It's, you're sad, you're grieving, you need to figure it out. So, you know, no matter what it is, the idea of, oh, if you're in therapy, you're crazy. People would rather actually live with serious mental health issues. And these are things that I have actually seen and heard about. People actually living with a mental health issue rather than being labeled crazy. So I would rather be depressed. I would rather hear voices. I would rather, you know, drink myself into a stupor. I would rather get high every single day than be labeled crazy because I'm going to a therapist to get help. Here's the funny thing. Nobody has to know you're in therapy. Not a soul has to know that you're in therapy. Your therapist isn't going to tell anybody else that you're in therapy. We can't, because that's our livelihood. If we tell somebody, we could lose our license. So that's a little bit, that's the incentive for us to keep your secret. So if anybody finds out that you're in therapy, it's because you wanted them to know. And if you wanted them to know, you can't be mad at us for that. And people think about how it affects your insurance and, you know, insurance companies, you know, if I go through my insurance, then, you know, my other doctors are going to know. Well, let me put a stop to this really quick, because this is a question that I get regularly about going through insurance. I don't have the money to pay for therapy and I can't pay for it for cash and I don't want to go through my insurance. Here's how insurance works. Insurance for therapy works the same way as insurance for any medical doctor. If you decide to go to a doctor, your boss will not know what the name of your medical doctor is. As such, your boss will not know what the name of your therapist is. Your boss will not know that you have a doctor's appointment unless you tell them that you have a doctor's appointment. And the same applies for therapy. Even so, your actual medical doctor, there's a reason why when you go to a new doctor, you know, every time you go to a new doctor, you have to fill out this form and it asks you for the name of your other doctor. Can you give me the name of your previous doctor? Can you tell me this? Do you have this disorder? You have this, you have this, you have this. It asks you this whole list of things that we hate, that form that all of us hate to fill out. Yeah, if you decide to not put on that form, now I am not encouraging you to lie. Let me put that out there. I, as a therapist, am not encouraging you to lie to your doctor. But if you decide not to put on there that you are seeing a therapist, your doctor will not know. They will not know. And here's the funny thing. Even if you put the name of your therapist on there, so if I have a client that comes to me, is seeing me and they go to their medical doctor, they go to a cardiologist or whatever, their neurologist, just a regular PCP, whoever it is, and they put my name. Yeah, I am seeing, this is my therapist. All right, they put my name on there and the doctor calls me. I cannot even acknowledge that I know this person. I can't acknowledge that they are a client unless that same client gave me permission to speak to this person. So it's all good and well. You can say, oh, you know, I'm seeing Kiwasha. That's who my therapist is. You can call her and she'll give you my records. Doctor calls me, hey, Kiwasha, how are you doing? I am well, thank you. I am seeing your patient so-and-so and they told me to call you. Okay, well, you know, can you send over your records? I am not sure who you're referring to. I cannot confirm or deny if that's one of my patients. That's literally my response. I have no choice but to respond like that. And even if the client calls me and says, yeah, no, you can tell them. No, I need this in writing. I need this in writing. I need you to actually write me, text me, shoot me an email. So smoke signals and carrier pigeons are not going to work. I need you to actually send me something in writing, a disclosure document in writing with your signature on it that says, yeah, you can talk to this specific doctor, right? Or this specific doctor's office. And then I can say, yes, I know this client. This is my client and here's what it is. And even then, it's still to a degree up to my discretion what I'm going to release to them. Unless you say, I want everything. Now you have a right to your whole entire therapeutic medical record. It's still a record. So you can have the whole thing and you can give it to whoever you want. But I, as your therapist or whoever your therapist is or whoever your psychiatrist is, they cannot. So the concern of who is going to know that you're in therapy and how the insurance factor works, it is a myth. That is not how it works. You have to tell them. And HIPAA is a very, very real thing. So if I accidentally slip up and decide, yeah, that's my client, and tell them all these different things and you didn't give me permission and they decide to treat you a certain way and it fails, you can sue someone for that. You can sue me for that. And not only after you sue me, that's a malpractice suit. Not only that, I have to go in front of my ethical board because of it. So it's a real, real thing. This whole idea of what I can share and what I can't share. So if you decide to go to therapy, not a soul has to know. And again, there's nothing to be ashamed of in going to therapy. There really, really isn't. And I get it because, I mean, I am a therapist. And at one point I was ashamed to go to therapy. I was ashamed to admit that I was a therapist. But for me, it was more on the Christian aspect. And, you know, that is definitely going to be a whole different podcast where we talk about the whole idea of the Black church and the view of going to therapy particularly and, you know, just praying your mental illness away. We'll talk about that. But for me, that's where it was stemming from. The idea of, you know, what if someone sees me? What if someone hears that I go? And, you know, I was afraid, but it just got to the point where I couldn't deal with it anymore. And the thing is, a lot of times we wait until things get so bad, so terrible, so unbearable before we get help, right? If we are gaining weight, and I'm guilty of this, I'm very, very guilty of this. You're gaining weight. You know, you put your pants on, your favorite pair of jeans on that normally, you know, make you look cute and everything like that. And you realize you're having a little struggle zipping them up. Ladies, you know, when you have to do a split and a squat to get the jeans all the way up, this is something that we've had to do, you know, sometimes. And you do that and you realize, all right, I'm gaining weight. I really need to figure out a way to lose weight. I need to figure out a way to lose weight. Okay. At that point, we acknowledge it. So we might go on a quick diet or whatever the situation is. We don't wait until we are four sizes up before we say, oh, you know, maybe I have gained a little weight. No, we knew that we were gaining the weight. That's just how it works. We knew it. And if we decided to do something, that's one thing. If we didn't, that's another thing. But you can't really say that you were surprised. Same thing with mental health. A lot of times we recognize that something is going on, that something is just not right. We recognize it, but we are so afraid of therapy that we're like, oh, it's not that serious. I couldn't tell you the numerous times that I've heard people say, it's not that serious. I don't need it. I'm different. They, so-and-so needs it. This other person needs it. They will point out all kinds of different things of who else needs it, who else wants it. You know, they can point out a person's issues and it's just like, you are literally talking about yourself, but you don't recognize that. And that's fine. It is what it is. And people get to the point where they know that they need therapy at some point in time. However, you know when you need help. And it's better for you to get help sooner rather than later. Because unfortunately, with some mental illnesses, later never comes. And later can be death. And later can be serious injury that you can't come back from. So it's better for you to get the help when you realize that something's wrong, even if you just want to go. I'm not saying that you have to just go, you know, every time you have some simple issue, just go. Just go for a checkup. If I'm a person that I don't get sick. Lord, I am blessed in that form. I don't get sick. Don't get flu shots. I've never had the flu in my life. I don't really get any type of illness or anything like that. I am fortunate, which means that if I start to cough too hard, I'm going to a doctor immediately. I am not going to wait until I see blood. I'm not going to wait until I can't breathe. I'm going to the doctor immediately. Why? Because it's out of the norm for me to be sick. So the minute I feel like I'm getting sick and I've taken, you know, whatever, what is it, emergency or anything like that, the minute I feel like I'm getting sick, I will immediately go to the doctor and try to rectify the situation as soon as possible. And that's kind of the way that we want to go about mental health. As soon as you recognize that something is wrong, go get the help that you need. Go get the help that you need. Go get the help that you need. Don't wait. That is extremely, extremely, extremely important. I don't know how much I can stress that. Because sometimes you finally go to therapy and you expect that it's instantaneous. You went to 2 sessions. It took you 6 months to get to this point. You went to 2 sessions and you're not completely healed. So now you're mad at the therapist and you want to say that therapy doesn't work. That's not how that works either. It takes time. It took time to get you there. It's going to take time to get you to the best version of you. That's how therapy works. And not only that, therapy is 90% dependent on you, not even on your therapist. This is not, I know that sounds crazy. Like, why I need you for is 90% dependent on me? Because you have to do the work. You can come and see you're probably going to see your therapist at most, on average, 1 time a week, right? Or maybe 1 time a month. So if you only do therapy 1 time a month, but you don't implement anything that your therapist and you discuss in therapy, when you don't see them, how on earth are you going to see results? That's like seeing your trainer once a month and only eating right and working out the day you see your trainer. But you don't eat right or work out any other day for the whole month and expect to see a change in your body. That's just not how any of this works. So I always encourage people to get help when they can. And the financial aspect of it, a lot of people don't realize. Hint, hint, your insurance company is probably covering therapy. A lot of people, they don't publicize that. But when I was going through my situation, I had no idea that therapy was covered until I called them and they were like, yeah, you have unlimited sessions. I was like, wait, what? They're like, yeah, it's unlimited. My doctor visits aren't unlimited. Well, my therapy sessions were unlimited. I had unlimited sessions as long as there's a need. So as long as your therapist is like, yeah, they need to come. This is what's going on. They need to come. You can go. You can go. And even then, before they even try to see, you know, if you need to continue, you are allowed to go for 12 sessions. At least I was. I was allowed to go for 12 sessions before the insurance company even try to question anything. 12 sessions. So if I'm going once a week, that would be 3 months. 3 months minimum before the insurance company even saw a problem, and you want 2 sessions and think you're going to be better. That's not how that works. So be patient with your therapist, be patient with yourself, but be willing to do the work.